This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Coming today, we'll visit with General Ron Richard, the former president of the Tiger Athletic Foundation. He'll reflect on the plight of veterans in America, and we'll get his assessment of the Trump administration, 13 and a half months into the presidency of one Donald John Trump. Also, Craig Stevens of GAIN, G-A-I-N, on the status of the Bayou Bridge Pipeline Project. Wallace Watkins, the Capital Access reporter for WRKF, on the prospects for the regular legislative session, which starts Monday after a bruising special session that collapsed this week. And Jamie Setz, the executive director of the Capital Region Planning Commission, on the benefits of carpooling in Baton Rouge traffic. Now the news on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. In just a bit, we'll hear from Major General Ron Richard, formerly head of the Tiger Athletic Foundation, but General Richard, who served our country in several war zones, will be here to talk about primarily the military and some major happenings in our community regarding veterans. 877-217-5757 is your number. We begin with Craig Stevens. He is affiliated with Grow America's Infrastructure Now, and Craig is here to talk about the Bayou Bridge Project. There is a legal battle ongoing about the 163-mile crude oil pipeline, and a part of it has been, part of the pipeline project, has been halted by a judicial action. So what are your thoughts about, in your view, the importance of this project, Craig Stevens?
Well, thanks for having me on today, Jim, and I think this is an important project for a number of your listeners because Louisiana is so focused on the energy industry, and there are so many, I think, benefits to Louisiana's economy when it comes to the energy and energy infrastructure industries. The judge's decision was actually, I think, surprising, certainly because the company itself had received dozens of permits from the federal and state authorities, had received all of its permits, in fact, for this project. And I think when companies invest, you know, in this case, $750 million into the construction, design, and eventual operation of an infrastructure project like that, they believe that if they follow the regulations, cross every T, dot every I, do their due diligence with meetings and sightings, that ultimately the regulations will protect them from some of these judicial actions. One of our legal advisors, Richard Epstein, who is a professor up at NYU, called it an aggressive reading of the law that the judge, Judge Dick, went so far beyond to actually stop construction there in the basin. So we're hopeful that on appeal this will be overturned and they will allow construction to resume in the basin. In the meantime, we are glad that the company continues to construct the pipeline outside the basin to ensure that the pipeline can be online on time, but also that individuals aren't losing their jobs at this point.
Federal Judge Shelley Dick in Baton Rouge on the 23rd of February, in a preliminary injunction, halted pipeline construction of Bayou Bridge Pipeline, and this pipeline is a controversial project. As noted, it spans a big part of Louisiana, almost all of South Louisiana, 163 miles going from Calcasieu Parish to St. James Parish. And there are those, such as General Honoré, who has been on this program, the head of the Green Army, who believe that this will disrupt the environment and affect an area that many view as a pristine area that should be preserved. How do you respond to those concerns?
Yeah, so oil has to be transported here in the United States. So, you know, here we use about 800 million gallons of petroleum products every day. 60% of that is for transportation, of course, for jet fuel and for our automobiles. But 40% goes to other things like the plastics industry, the manufacturing industry, even items like carpet and makeup and contact lenses and cell phones all have petroleum products in them. So we need petroleum just to live our lives. Now, when it comes to pipelines, it's the safest, most environmentally friendly way to transport this energy that we need. And the technology that these companies who build these pipelines are now using are, you know, far superior than they were decades ago. And I think what Judge Dick did was she looked at what had happened along the basin with some of the spoil banks that impacted some of the crawfishermen there, and actually took a look at that from several decades ago and placed the burden on the ongoing construction or the present construction without a realization or a recognition that technology and building has actually improved over those several decades.
Well, this was only a preliminary injunction, so the fight goes on, and Craig Stevens, of course, is in this fight as an advocate for the pipeline, and the group is Grow America's Infrastructure Now. Tell us about your group, GAIN. How did it get involved in this dispute?
Sure. So we actually started around the Dakota Access Pipeline up in North Dakota, Iowa, South Dakota, and Illinois. And we were a relatively sleepy coalition, getting community and community activists and landowners involved in the energy infrastructure discussion up there. And then, of course, after 2 years of ongoing discussions and even construction had been started, then the protests started that so many people heard about in North Dakota. And from that point on, you know, our communications apparatus really ramped up, just more or less as a fact-checking body, because so much misinformation was getting out there. So we wanted to be a counter to some of that misinformation. And after that, you know, we saw an opportunity to take our coalition national. And so we've talked to folks that are working on infrastructure projects, not just energy infrastructure, but also telecom infrastructure, for example, where we've got companies that are looking to build the next generation 5G infrastructure for Wi-Fi and telecom. And we want to make sure that infrastructure is supported here in the United States, both financially, but also with smart regulations. And as I spoke to earlier, regulatory certitude, so that if a company, whether it's AT&T or Bayou Bridge or Enbridge or TransCanada, invests billions of dollars into a project with the understanding that if they follow the rules, the project will be allowed to move forward, we want to make sure that actually is something they can believe in.
Well, the governor of Louisiana has been hit from both sides on this issue. Those who are against it say he's not doing enough, and those who are for it say he's not an advocate for a project that obviously has some economic impact on the state. Your thoughts about whether the governor is pivotal to the success or lack thereof of this project?
Well, I think the governor has let the process move forward, the regulatory process move forward. And as I mentioned, you know, this specific project, it has already received the state permits that it needs. And so just by not being an activist and standing in the way, I think there is some benefit to that. And I think, again, we live in a democratic society where we have rules, and we understand that there are rules and laws that we abide by in order to live our lives, number one, but also to move our economy forward. So just by letting the regulations play out, I think is something that he has done that actually benefits not only this project, but actually further investment in infrastructure in Louisiana.
What about the crawfishermen who say it would be devastating to them?
You know, and that is something that we're certainly sensitive to. And you know, I think that goes back to, again, the way it was done poorly decades ago and the advancement in technology when it comes to how this drilling and how these pipes are laid. You know, this actual pipe would be at least 3 feet below the basin. In some places where it's even more environmentally sensitive, it would be deeper. And, of course, it would also be thick-walled, so there would actually be extra wall to make sure that that oil didn't seep. And additionally, of course, it's monitored around the clock, both by aerial views every week, but also they measure the amount of throughput, the amount of oil, crude, that's actually going through. So if there ever is a leak or a seam, they can identify that and shut it down immediately.
Yeah, but there are those who say we've heard this before, and look what happened with the Deepwater Horizon. And the Atchafalaya Basin is a Louisiana treasure, and there are those who also say, look at the ancient Cypress and how it will be affected. You are, of course, an advocate, but are those legitimate concerns?
Well, absolutely. And I think, you know, you mentioned the Deepwater Horizon. And from that point on, and even probably before that, the industry has really been on notice. And they recognize that environmentalists, local citizens, the media, government, is really going to hold these companies to account if there ever is a failure. And you know, there has, as I mentioned, there has been an uptick in the technology, an uptick in the investment in these projects, And also, these are projects that are they're built around sound science. Nobody wants a leak for a company. A company doesn't want to leak because of the brand reputational damage. You talk about BP. I mean, that was a $20 billion hit to them. But also, they're losing product and losing time. So there are a number of reasons why they would not want to leak. And I think they also want to be, most of them want to be good citizens, good corporate citizens. So I think you're seeing that more and more from the development of what these companies are doing. And I think for the opposition, and if you look at it from a global perspective, you know, the opposition was really after some of the super majors like BP, Exxon, Mobil, Shell. I mean, that really where the attack was about 20, 30 years ago. And I think those super majors invested a lot in their government affairs and their corporate affairs and their communications and their community affairs to make sure that they were getting their messages out. So now they see their opportunity at the midstream, at the pipeline companies. And they see this as a way to actually stop the development of fossil fuels in our country. This isn't about a pipeline. This is actually about stopping the development of fossil fuels. And, you know, you see the same list of people who are fighting this pipeline were the same people that we saw up in North Dakota. They just kind of go where the project is. And for them, you know, this is about killing the heart by cutting the veins.
All right.
And
well,
we want to make sure
we're short on time, but what Louisiana has lots of pipelines, and our environment has been disrupted by industry for at least a half a century or more. Why Louisiana again? Why are we basically the energy producer for the rest of the country?
That's a great question, and I think that you know you've got a lot of expertise down there. You've got, of course, some product, and you've got the infrastructure already. You've got refineries built. You've got facilities, and of course, you like you say, you do have some pipelines there, which allows current pipeline to co-locate with them to actually mitigate some of that environmental disruption.
Well, thank you very much, Craig Stevens, and obviously this is an issue that will continue. We're back after this timeout. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us. General Ron Richard is with us. He was head of the Tiger Athletic Foundation for well over a decade. He retired after more than three decades as a U.S. Marine veteran, reaching one of the highest levels in the Marine Corps. He was commanding general of the base at Camp Lejeune or Lejeune, depending on where you are in this country. But also, he was involved as a warrior in several wars, including the Vietnam, with heavy action there, the Persian Gulf War. And he was at the table where the decisions were made in the Balkans with General Leslie Clark when President Clinton was in office. And General Richard is an advocate, of course, for the men and women who serve our country and do so heroically and gallantly with a lot of, without a lot of fanfare. And he's here to talk about a few items. But as far as the plight of veterans right now, are we taking care of our veterans as we should?
Thank you for inviting me, Jim. We are doing better taking care of our veterans, but there's, like a lot of things, a long way to go. And this is why I appreciate you asking me to come on the show.
Well, we've got an event coming, one in June, I know, but you're involved with daily issues regarding veterans. But what's coming in the near term that is addressing this issue that's so near and dear to you and important to the rest of us?
Well, primarily, I'd like to just bring to everybody's attention the Red, Rock, and Blue softball charitable events that are taking place June 22nd. This is benefits veterans and veterans' families, mostly Blue Star Moms of Louisiana, which are mothers that have children involved in the armed forces. Support Our War Heroes, a part of that. It's just a general awareness of veterans, and it's a great charitable event that happens June 22nd. And they're looking, quite frankly, for sponsors, and they're looking for charitable donations. All of the monies that are raised stay locally here and help the veterans here in Louisiana.
That's June 22nd. For those who'd like more information, best way to find you or somebody with this group?
They can certainly contact me at 225-405-1575, or they could primarily talk to Jacques Doucet at WAFB-TV. He's the one that initiated this. So Jacques Doucet at WAFB.com is the internet portion in which you'd like to get involved. Please get involved. This is something that doesn't go nationally. It stays right here, and it helps your neighbors that are veterans.
Well, you're here to talk about a few things. And General Richard retired from the military, came back home, had a lot of offers that were more lucrative in industry. Businesses like to hire generals, don't they?
That's what I understand.
Yeah, you had a lot of offers, as do generals, and for good reason. And the president likes generals. He surrounded himself with a lot of generals, some of whom you know pretty well.
I do, and I suspect the president likes generals on some days, and some days he may not, which is a characteristic of hiring a general.
What's your take on General Kelly?
I know General Kelly, and my take on him is that if he wouldn't be the chief of staff for the president of the United States, the president would have to invent somebody like him.
He's a tough guy, apparently in accord with the president on a lot of issues, but it's a tough job at any time, but working for President Trump has to be an unbelievable merry-go-round every day.
Yes, it is, and I'm certainly not qualified to talk about the day-to-day events that take place. I am qualified to talk about if you hire a general, whether it's in business or in a political arena, he will operate somewhat differently than the corporate leader will. And that's not to say that he's dogmatic and slams his fist down and is autocratic. It's just the opposite, quite frankly. The important part of that is the integrity of what the mission is and what the mission is right in front of them from day to day.
877-217-5757 is your number, 297-5633 in Baton Rouge, and you can send us an email, talk@talklouisiana.org. General Ron Richard with us. He was, as I mentioned, at the various highest levels of warfare and in the U.S. Marine Corps. Something you chose to do when you graduated from LSU in 1968. People were running from the draft, running from the war, doing everything they could, making up bone spurs. You decided that you wanted to serve. That is a remarkable decision. Why did you do it?
Well, I was not the only one, Jim. There were many, many people, thousands and thousands.
But many got drafted and had to go. You volunteered, didn't you?
I did. Maybe it's because I didn't know about bone spurs. I'm not sure. But I am sure about this. I'm that's one of the highlights of a decision that was made in my youth. It certainly wasn't enjoyable while I was served in combat in Vietnam. But it's one of the decisions I'm proud of, and I would recommend any young man or woman to consider that after their educational advancement is complete.
Now, the general was born in October of 1946. Three U.S. presidents, Clinton, Bush, and Trump, all born in the summer of 46. Trump in June, Bush July, Clinton August of 46. They all found ways to stay out of Vietnam. Does that bother you?
It doesn't bother me per se. It makes me wonder what their personal politics were in their youth.
They were against the war, at least against the war when it came to them fighting in it, but somebody had to fight the war. We just don't have wars without soldiers, so do they really have the moral authority to be president of the United States if they didn't serve when it was their turn?
That's your interpretation that they were against the war in Vietnam. I don't know if they were or not.
Two of them actually say they were for it, but one of them, we know, Bill Clinton was against it, but nonetheless, they were against personally being in the war, and that's something that it was their decision, and they weren't alone. In fact, that was a decision that most American young men made at that time. But should they be with a straight face running for president when, at times, as all of them have to make that decision on whether to send other people's kids off to wars?
Well, I can tell you with a straight face that I'm proud of the decision that I made, and I don't begin to evaluate other people's decision. But I do wonder. I do wonder about those times, which are different than these times. But those times were completely different, and I remember the shenanigans that took place on a college campus to exempt yourself from the draft, and the Vietnam War. However, I do, after 33 years of active duty, respect other people's opinions.
Well, you mentioned shenanigans on college campuses. A whole lot of these guys got master's degrees and PhDs, the Newt Gingriches of the world. They stayed in college a long time, and I wonder what the reason was. Maybe it was to get a deferment. Maybe.
Well, I stayed in college
4 years.
4 years, and I came back, a little aside, I came back and gave a speech once when I was a brigadier general, and the chancellor of LSU said, well, look, we're going to resurrect your grades, and we're going to publish them and put them in a frame. And I said, don't touch those things. I'm not sure exactly what happened. Back then, if you raised your hand, you went.
And you were in ROTC at LSU.
I was in ROTC for 2 years, the mandatory portion, and then the last 2 years I was in a Marine Corps commissioning program.
So you were getting ready.
I was getting ready, yes.
Had to shave your head, the whole deal, when you were in ROTC at LSU, right?
Shaved head, beanie, good morning, Mike the Tiger. I did it all.
You did it all, and yeah. Then served 33 years. And General Richard has been very forthcoming in previous appearances on this program, discussing the warfare and all its horror, not glory. There is some of that, but it's more horror than anything else. And it's something I don't think anybody wants to do, but as a soldier for the United States of America, sometimes, in your view, you got to do it. 877-217-5757. We're going to talk with General Richard about more of contemporary matters, and if you'd like to join the conversation locally, 297-5633, or send an email, talk@talklouisiana.org. Now the news with Karen Henderson. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Ali Baltazar and Becca Dill are producing today, and your number is 877-217-5757, and you can send an email, talk@talklouisiana.org. For General Ron Richard, who will be with us for a bit longer, retired U.S. Marine Corps officer who served as the commanding general of the base at Camp Lejeune. 877-217-5757, and as I stated before, General Richard has known warfare in all of its horror, serving both in Vietnam and in the Persian Gulf War. How many tours of duty in Vietnam for you?
I had one tour of duty in Vietnam, Jim. Many of my fellow Marines had more than that. I did not. But I would like to mention something, Jim, having to do with warfare per se, and that's the lack of qualified young men and women in today's America that don't qualify for military duty, even if they wanted to join.
Even if they want to.
Even if they want to. 71% of children between 17 and 24 do not qualify for military
it's
duty.
Basically because of physical fitness or lack thereof, isn't it?
Three reasons. Education, obesity, and behavioral characteristics. And behavioral characteristics fall into drug use and police records.
And that's our young people. That's the future of our country.
71%. In Louisiana, it's 75%. I'm part of a mission readiness organization, which is retired admirals and generals that are concerned about the future young development of our young men and women to make them qualified for military duty. Not that everybody should join, but as we get on in mm-hmm. the next millennium and the next decade, there's a certain amount of pool that we have to look into. Somebody's got to man the walls to keep the demons out.
Man the walls to keep the demons out. 877-217-5757. Dan, downtown. Dan, you're on the air with General Richard.
Yeah, General, as for the integrity of military generals that you allude to, can General Flynn perhaps regain some integrity by admitting his wrongdoing and telling the whole truth about Russian involvement in the 2016 election?
I'll certainly try to answer that in all candor. I don't know General Flynn. I'm not familiar with the specifics. And I think more importantly, I'm not familiar with what's classified or not classified in his dealings with foreign governments. I know there's some accusations, and he has admitted to certain accusations that apparently are true. I don't know if anybody can regain their reputation after being publicized and demonized as he has. That's a truthful answer, sir.
877-217-5757. Thank you, Dan. David in Atlanta. Hi, David. You're on the air with General Richard.
Good morning, gentlemen. In general, let me thank you from the bottom of my heart for your sacrifice and your service to the nation I love more than my own life. However, I think we might have a disagreement regarding the President of the United States. I can state two arguments why I believe, in my opinion, President Trump is at best guilty of malfeasance, at worst, treason. Why hasn't the nation spent the money appropriated to combat Russian interference in the 2018 election, according to Dan Coats, the head of the National Security Agency?
2016 election. Go ahead.
In the 2018 election, no money has been spent that the Congress has appropriated, according to Dan Coats, the head of the National Security Agency. And furthermore, Congress has authorized sanctions against Russia, which the president has not fully implemented. I mean, is the president taking his orders from the Kremlin?
Sir, I think you're being sensational here on radio. I appreciate the question, but some of the facts you cite are beyond normal, reasonable understanding.
All right. A new lawsuit filed by the adult film star from Baton Rouge, Stephanie Clifford, better known as Stormy Daniels, claims President Trump never signed a hush agreement regarding an alleged sexual encounter between the two, and therefore the agreement is void. She was paid $130,000, according to the president's own lawyer, who says he personally made the payment. Now, this, in an ordinary time, would be enough to bring down a president singularly. You're a straight arrow. I know General Richard, I think, well enough to know that he is not the kind of guy who would engage in that kind of conduct. But this man's a commander-in-chief. Is that concerning for you?
Yes, it is. It concerns me in all areas of our leaders, the word integrity and leadership. And yes, it bothers me. It concerns me. Now, the problem is, because of this word integrity, I have trouble and difficulty understanding what is truth by listening to commentators and listening to journalists and listening to different people with different views. It's very difficult for me to understand straightforward facts when I try to understand national news.
Well, there is that. But in this case, the president has not denied these allegations. His lawyer has admitted making the payment, says he personally did it. And it's a case in which it appears there is some validity to the claims by Ms. Clifford, Pride of Scotland, Bill Magnet High School class of 1997. So we'll see where it goes.
I suggest that if you have an opinion on that, go to the polls.
Well, and another listener, fairly says you, General Richard, were serving under President Clinton when he was accused accurately of having a relationship with an intern. Did that in any way cause you to have misgivings about him being your commander in chief?
Yes.
Yes. So
what more can I say?
But you can't deny an order if he tells you to go somewhere, and he told you to go to the Balkans.
I cannot deny a lawful order, and that was a lawful order.
And that turned out well as far as the U.S. Succeeding in its mission without any casualties. So sometimes people who are morally questionable make decisions that are good for our country. How do you square that, Allie?
I square that by receiving lawful orders and executing them. I don't judge the character of the person giving them to me. The issue is it or is it not a lawful order when you're a military officer or if you're a military leader?
Who was the last great president in your estimation?
I would say Lincoln because of the situation he found himself in. There were many great presidents, I believe, but no president found himself in that particular situation as he did. And, of course, our first president found himself in a do-or-die situation.
James in Metairie. James, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana. Hi, James.
Well, hi, Jim. How you doing? And hello to your guest. I want to, you know, we talked about General Flynn. Let's say hypothetically, it's been, I guess, acknowledged and admitted that General Flynn lied to the vice president. And if he did some other, committed some other crimes, General, what happens to this guy who right now, I guess, is pulling in a three-star general retirement pay? If he has a federal conviction, one or more federal convictions, what will he be busted down to, let's say, 06 or something, and will they and could they take away this disgraceful individual's retirement pay?
Well, I'm not going to characterize his character, but to answer your question specifically, yes, action could be taken, initiated by the National Command Authority, to change his retirement category.
And James and Metairie, it's nice to hear from you. James has called a few times through the years, and thank you for your service in Vietnam.
You're very welcome,
Vietnam,
Jim.
As well. And in general, people of a certain age, in 1968, I was 10 years old, but I am old enough to know that the decision you made was a gallant one. Many did not make that same decision in 1968, and as I stated, most American men, for whatever reason, decided that Vietnam was not the place they wanted to be and did what they could to stay out of harm's way.
But, Jim, let me interrupt. There are many that didn't feel that way, and there are many that went. And my characterizing my decision as gallant is incorrect. There was no gallantry about it. It was just a sense of duty and sense of the thing to do.
877-217-5757. A few more minutes with General Richard Christian in Livingston Parish. Hi, Christian. You're on Talk Louisiana with General Richard.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. General, I have a question, kind of getting away from politics for a moment, but you mentioned about the percentages here in Louisiana nationwide that are actually eligible to join the services. And I myself am a medically retired staff sergeant out of the Army, active duty for 15 years. And, you know, over those 15 years, I saw a lot of changes over the course of my time with the Army. And, you know, you talked about this percentage is eligible, but there's actually a lot of toxic leadership inside the military today. And I know we've initiated some programs and things to kind of weed those out. But looking at that and how do we change the current environment that is active duty or even Reserve or National Guard today?
I'm not sure I understand your question. How do you change the culture of the military today?
Yes, Chris.
Yes, sir. So for instance, you know, we're doing a lot of programs with SHARP and in our military.
Okay, you're fading out on us, but he was obviously commenting about your thoughts regarding 75% of the people not being able to get in, even if they wanted to, and then the culture within the military is perhaps different than it was when you were there. Go ahead.
I'm assuming he's talking about the changes in certain restrictions within the military. I'm not sure I understand what
he's asking. I'll tell you what. We will bring General Richard back very soon, and we'll pick up on this, but thank you for your call, Christian, and we thank you for listening. Coming next, we'll hear from Wallace Watkins, Capital Access reporter, on what happened in the special session and the forecast for the regular session after this quick timeout on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Engster. Thank you for joining us. 877-217-5757 is your number for Talk Louisiana, and we're joined now by Wallace Watkins, Capital Access reporter for WRKF. You heard her reports this morning if you were listening to 89.3. And right now, the lawmakers are trying to pick up the pieces after a broken special session. And Wallace, you were on the front lines at the Capitol. It was hardly a success.
Hi, Jim. Yeah, you know, we're really kind of in the same place now as we were before the special session. The governor has called the special session a failure, so have members of the legislature. They really just, at the end of the day, they couldn't compromise. There was a real lack of trust among members in the House, and it meant that the special session ended 2 days early with no solution for the fiscal cliff.
So now the regular session starts next Monday, the 12th, and the governor has said that a special session will be imperative after the conclusion of the regular session. So they're going right to the finish line on this.
Yeah, you know, so the like you said, the regular session starts Monday, and the main focus there is going to be trying to pass a budget for the next fiscal year, which starts July 1st. The governor has warned, and his executive budget proposes some big cuts to programs like TOPS, higher education, and healthcare. Those are the two largest pots of money in the state's budget, but they're also the least protected. So the uncertainty over how much money those programs will or will not receive, and how that impacts people in Louisiana, that question likely won't be answered until June. Like you mentioned, the governor had a press conference after the end of the special session on Monday, and he said that he had already asked House and Senate leaders, House Speaker Taylor Barra, Senate President John Alario, to actually end the regular session early, sometime in mid-May. They would then immediately go into a second special session in order to give legislators one last chance to try and replace some of the revenue that's going to fall off. He mentioned that he would like to see the second special session end on June 4th. Now, that's the last scheduled day for the regular session. And the idea there is that if they're not in session for any additional days, then that would save taxpayers about $60,000 a day.
With the collapse of the special session that we just had as the backdrop, is there really a good feeling about a consensus being possible?
You know, that really remains to be seen. You know, I spoke with Robert Travis Scott yesterday. He's the president of the Public Affairs Research Council here in Louisiana, right? And he said, you know, it's going to be really tough for legislators to move past the deep divide that was in this special session and move on to the work that really needs to be done in the regular. So, you know, the real question, I think, is can they get past the partisanship and get to the work at hand and hopefully find a way to find some compromise?
Well, we thank you for joining us, and I'm sure we'll be calling again soon. Wallace Watkins, Capital Access reporter for WRKF, and you can hear Wallace's reports frequently on 89.3. Thank you very much, Wallace.
Thanks for having me.
Good talking with you. And we're joined now by Jamie Setz, and he is on the front lines of trying to improve traffic in Baton Rouge. And yesterday there was an announcement about ride sharing. And Jamie, what do you think? Are you going to convince people to carpool?
It would be great if in the capital region we could convince people to carpool like they did 30 years ago. Because if we had those ratios or percentages, we would probably have less traffic today.
Well, we've got too many cars, and in particular on the interstate. In some cities, people use the interstate at last resort. Seems to be a first option in Baton Rouge.
Yes, it's a... Historically, not building other roads and byways has made us heavily dependent on the interstate. And as we grow into suburbia in Ascension and Livingston parishes, the interstates are going to be our main routes in and out of Baton Rouge.
And what are some of the principal ideas that you're conveying for this ride-sharing admonition that you're giving our citizens?
Well, this actually came from, you know, our state government is looking at the capital region as a pilot program for the rest of the state, recognizing that, as your previous caller just talked about, the state legislature is not coming up with new revenue or revenue necessary to adequately address our both maintenance of our system and the congestion. So DOTD has looked at using the capital region as that pilot program, and it's very fortuitous the timing, because we are about to go into an I-10 widening project where we conceivably could drop a lane on I-10 for the life of the construction project.
Which in the short term would make it even worse.
Yes, it would be. But parallel to this effort, DOTD is also looking at, like they do in some of the cities that have more congestion, looking at shoulder running during peak periods of the day. And so there are studies ongoing to how can we maximize carpooling by actually giving you a lane, potentially, that only carpoolers use.
Jamie Setz is the voice we're hearing, Executive Director of the Capital Region Planning Commission. Jim on Segan. Hi, Jim. You're on the air with Jamie.
Hi, gentlemen. You know, this city does not believe in mass transit at all. We have a serious problem. We just redid I-12. We're in the process of doing I-10, and not a single HOV lane in sight. We don't recognize that so many people live outside of the parish, and I live in Livingston, and that they commute in. And so everything is all about what East Baton Rouge Parish is doing and ignoring the fact that we really need bus depots and we need carpool park and rides that are in Livingston Parish and in Ascension Parish, because that's where people are coming from.
That's a very good point, sir. And in the past, there has been attempts to do park and rides. One of the questions, and I think this travel demand management work is going to help answer that, is when do we get fed up enough with the traffic to start trying some of these other modes? And you know, you brought up the East Baton Rouge versus the other parishes. What's even more interesting when you look at the data, sir, is that we have about 400,000 people that are employed in our five parish area. Over 100,000 of those workers come from outside the five parishes. So when you look at travel from, let's say, the North Shore or Hammond every day, we have more than 10,000 people coming from outside, further away than Livingston. Also, like, for instance, from New Orleans. You have more than 12,000 people coming a day from New Orleans every day into Baton Rouge. Those people live far outside of Ascension, but they lock up our traffic just as if they came from Ascension.
This is the Commuter Crew, K-R-E-W-E, that Jamie Setz has unveiled, along with the Capital Region Planning Commission, encouraging carpooling, but also, as you state, you'd like to see more people on bicycles, public transit. How do we convince more people to ride the bus?
We get more effective buses, and then the HOV lanes are very interesting, because if you give people an option, then they start taking that option. And one of the problems we have even reporting travel is that we have so few options to take other than your single occupancy vehicle car. And this is what this program is looking at, it getting us to use other options. Any option other than getting in your car is what the plan is.
Well, I have a CATS bus stop right at the corner where I live, and I can tell you a lot of times I see those buses go by and there's nobody on there. Those beautiful buses.
Yes.
So how do we encourage people to use public transportation? Are they afraid? What's the reason why people don't do it?
I think it has a lot to do with the fact that if you get in a bus and the traffic's just as bad, well, you just waited at a bus stop for the traffic to be just as bad. And so we're looking at soft preemption of buses, where buses help the travel flow on the main lines. Newer buses, obviously, when you ride a bus and you get wet from the rain falling through the roof, you're not going to ride that bus, and those types of issues have pretty much gone away. You've seen on a lot of the main routes, Florida, up along Plank, and they've been putting in bus shelters. Lots of bus shelters have come in, I think over 100 mm-hmm. in the last year. So making improvements to people riding is a big help.
All right, a question from a listener, Holly, about this Government Street project. Is that going to make traffic even worse and maybe even, she says short term, but this could be long term as well. We're talking about cutting lanes on Government. How are you going to get a bus on Government Street now?
Well, that was one of the key questions that came up, was is it legal in Louisiana for a bus to stop in a bike lane or on a sidewalk? Apparently, for public transit vehicles, it is. It's a little unclear in the law.
They're going to be pulling up on the curb?
Yeah, they're going to be pulling up close to the thing so that they're not blocking the travel lane as the buses come in. That was a big concern, was how do the buses stop? And my concern from the beginning was they would just stop in the middle of the road. But since it's legal for them to pull.
And you say you're working with employers to try to get carpooling encouraged. How's that going to work?
Well, we've done outreach efforts to pretty much every state agency, every department. We're hitting all the major employers from Exxon on down. And in the interviews with Exxon, it was interesting. They do a lot of ride sharing, and they've always been a big ride share company. So some companies are doing it. We're just trying to bring it out to all companies.
Some of these cities have a carpooling lane.
Yes, that's what the I-10 and 12 studies on the shoulder are looking at right now at DOTD.
So we'd have a carpooling lane, and there's a big ticket if you're not carpooling and you're driving in that lane. You don't want to do that in Los Angeles.
No, I had a friend that lives in Los Angeles, got a ticket last summer for $440.
For driving in a carpooling lane and not carpooling.
Yes.
So you don't want to make that mistake. But Jamie Setz, this is an issue that has relevance, and we will talk again soon. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you, sir.
And thanks for joining us. And tomorrow, Julie Baxter Payer will be hosting, and Jay Darden, the Commissioner of Administration, will be the first guest. So you won't want to miss that. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned.
For a podcast of today's show, go to WRKF.org or find the Talk Louisiana podcast on the WRKF app. We welcome your feedback and topic suggestions. Email us at talk@talklouisiana.org. Talk Louisiana is a production of WRKF in Baton Rouge.